everybody, Big Anklevich here, and welcome to this episode of the Anklecast. With me, as usual, is Announcer Man.
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father.
Oh, okay, that's enough, Announcer Man. We're trying to make this a shorter episode than the last time. We really overdid it last time. With us also is our usual guest. Can you introduce him, Announcer Man?
Rish Outfield.
Okay, thanks, Announcer Man. We'll see you later.
Why did I even show up today?
Yeah, sometimes I always wonder that too, but anyways. Welcome, Rich Outfield. How you doing?
Can I just say that this is the most recent time I've appeared on your episode?
No, I'm sorry. There isn't time. we're going to go ahead and get into the story. If you remember, this is my story called Do-Over. It's about a guy who goes back in time and he's redoing things in his life. Make sure you go back and listen to the first three parts of this story if you haven't listened to them yet. This is part four. It had, in this last episode, probably a lot of my favorite stuff from the story. It's when things really started to go weird. People, their minds are kind of fracturing because the people who have had things changed in their lives, they can't deal with the changes. They're remembering both how things should be and also how they are, and it's messing them up. So Joel has moved to Arizona, basically to get away from his crazy brother who's a gang member, and he's just getting out of prison, but also as an attempt to help out his wife Jillian, who is having these problems with her mind fracturing, and he's hoping that getting her away from the things that she knows might make it less common. And so they're in Arizona, and you think everything might be going well, but then there's a knock at the door, and someone is on the other side of that door. And just in case you think you know who it is, because I led you astray with the music at the end of the last episode. You don't know who it is. It's not that one. Anyways, we're going to go ahead and jump into the story. And
Wait, what music did you play at the end of the episode? You played Don't Fear the Reaper as there was a knock at the door?
No, as I've been doing, if there's a song that gets referenced in the story, I use it as the in or out music. And so I used the song that was referenced in the story, which I guess it turns out to make the knock on the door into a red herring. It's not that guy, but you've been tensely waiting for us to get into what is who it is. So let's find out. Let's head into chapter 15 and find out who is on the other side of that door. And we'll talk to you on the other side of the story. Will you remember me? 15. He opened it without the slightest trepidation. He was curious because they were still new in town and didn't get visitors. He was expecting to have to tell a couple of Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses to hit the road. When he saw who it was, his stomach dropped and his eyes bulged. "Hi," the woman said. "You don't know who I am, but I've been having some real issues recently. Everything is wrong somehow, and I can't get your name out of my head." The woman was wrong. He knew exactly who she was. Allison Yvette Dillard was standing at his door. No, that wasn't right. This was Allison Yvette Garza. She wasn't Dillard yet. His wife, his original wife, was here at his door. And it wasn't an accident. She was looking for him. Joel looked over his shoulder to see if Jillian had heard the door knock and was coming. He slipped out the door and closed it behind him so their voices didn't alert her. Allison looked at him curiously, surprised by his behavior. "I'm sorry," he said, trying to pretend he didn't know exactly what was going on. Allison looked around furtively. No, not furtively. She looked hunted, like some kind of nightmare was dogging her heels, and she was disobeying it by being here. I know it sounds weird. It sounds crazy. I probably am crazy, really, and I'm sorry to do this to you, since you have no idea even who I am. But my mind keeps telling me that everything is wrong, and you are the reason. You are what's wrong, or what's missing, or something. She trailed off, closed her eyes slowly, and bowed her head for a moment. Shit, she barked in a whisper. This is coming out all wrong. You think I'm crazy already, don't you? He looked into her face as she stared back at him, pleading with those big brown eyes to find her sane and to want to hear more about her story. She looked so much like Jillian had 6 months ago when she had called him Lazy Bones. Confused, distracted, disjointed. He felt guilty all over again. It was his fault again for changing the past. And for Allison, he couldn't even say it was because he was trying to save her life. Allison had no part in any of that. All he was trying to do was avoid her bitchy future. No, Joel said, I don't think you're crazy. I think I know what you're talking about. The smile that spread across her face set Joel's heart stirring, and also another part lower down than his heart. He'd seen that smile so many hundreds of times in his other life. He'd loved Allison deeply back before things had gone sour, and even though he had Jillian's love and affection, he missed Allison all the same. He supposed he'd been missing her for years and years now, since before they'd even gotten divorced, really. He wanted to go back to the way things had been when they'd begun their relationship, but that had been water under the bridge that he couldn't get back. Except now. Here, that Allison was on his doorstep, begging for him to listen to her. Shit, what to do? Okay, here's the deal, he said. I think I might know what you're talking about, but I can't talk right now. Can you meet me somewhere later and we can talk? She smiled again and nodded. Where do you want to meet? Hell, I don't know. How about the Denny's on the corner over there? At 6, he said, pointing. It looked as if a huge weight had been lifted off her shoulders. She seemed to stand straighter, and the smile wouldn't leave her face. Okay, she backed away slowly. I'll see you there. Okay, he said, turned and grabbed the doorknob and went back inside. As soon as the door closed, Jillian called to him from the other room.
Who is that?
She asked. Oh, just a couple of Mormon girls who wanted to know if we wanted to know about Joseph Smith or something.
Oh, okay, she said. I'm going to get in the shower. I've got to be to work soon.
He knew that very well, and for once, when he saw her walk past him naked, he didn't reach out his hand to grab a nipple. He didn't want to waylay her at all. 16. She was already seated and was looking out the window at the street with a worried, tense, you could even say fretful, expression on her face. She had been seated by the hostess in a booth that didn't have a window to the parking lot, so she hadn't seen him arrive. And, by the looks of her, the fact that she hadn't seen him yet was freaking her out. When he approached the table, and she turned and saw him, her demeanor changed completely. The worry melted from her face, and her high-beam smile that he'd seen at his apartment earlier returned.
I was afraid you wouldn't come, she said.
Well, I'm here, Joel said, sitting down across from her. Her smile slipped a bit.
I already ordered some coffee, but the waitress should be back in a minute, I think.
That's fine, Joel said. I'm not really hungry or anything. I just figured I ought to come to find out what your deal was. You seemed really upset.
You have no idea. My mind keeps falling more and more to pieces.
You have to realize that saying that kind of stuff doesn't inspire trust or anything, right? He asked.
I know it doesn't, yes.
The warm smile was being replaced by the distracted concern again. But you're still here saying it, Joel said.
It's the truth. I don't know what else to say. It's the reason I came to talk to you. Allison said, voice breaking a little as she spoke. The waitress appeared, and the conversation promptly stopped. "Are you ready to order?" she asked. Her name tag said she was called Beverly. Sure, I'll have a..." He had been watching what he ate really closely recently in an attempt to chisel his features a little more. It helped attract more customers for personal training, when the trainer actually looked like the stuff was working for him. But right now, he wanted some comfort food. Stress tended to bring that out in him. "Ah, hell, I'll have a BLT and a Dr. Pepper," he said.
"What about you, darling?"
she asked Allison.
"Coffee's fine for me."
"All right, I'll be back in just a minute with that drink."
And Beverly rushed away to other duties, making it safe for them to talk again.
"Okay, I guess you better tell me your story," Joel said.
Allison looked down at her coffee as if it had done something disturbing. Then, without raising her head, she began to narrate her tale. Joel watched her as she did, and was continually struck by the unfamiliar nature of her behavior. He had been married to Allison for more than 10 years, and had known her even longer. He'd never seen her act anything like this before, not even once. Allison had always been completely self-confident and self-assured. She was the kind of person who walked into a room and all eyes turned to her, and rightly so, because she radiated personality, style, and charisma. She took what she wanted wherever she went, and the people she took from usually counted themselves lucky to be allowed to contribute. This cringing, distracted, confused woman was nothing like the one he'd known.
"I used to live in L.A. I got a job at a health club, and I was enjoying my life and having no troubles whatsoever, but one day, maybe a year ago, I came out of my bedroom in the morning and said, 'Hi, Joel, good morning.' Only there was no one there. I had no idea why I'd said that. I didn't share my house with any roommates or anything, but my mind was insisting at that moment that I was living with a guy named Joel. That was where it began. From that moment forward, it was like I had two brains, two minds. In one of them, I was living a real life, but in another one, I was living with this guy named Joel Dillard. Again and again, it kept insisting that a guy named Joel should be there. Then it tried to tell me that we should be getting married. I was having a really hard time functioning at all, when half of my mind insisting that I was actually living another completely different life. Eventually, my freaked out mind wanted me to move to Phoenix. I thought that it would be okay because there was this guy I had been seeing on and off for several years that had moved out there. So I up and moved everything out here to Phoenix."
Joel knew the guy she was referring to. His name was Jim Erdman. He was the first person Allison had cheated on him with. When he'd come to Allison with the news that his brother Burrito was getting out of jail and asked her to move away with him, she'd suggested that they go to Phoenix, in hopes that she might be able to start up a little something with him again. He was glad that this addled Allison had reminded him of just how little she had ever loved him. It helped him tamp down the remembered feelings that were trying to boil to the surface while he was in her presence.
"Phoenix only made things worse, though," she continued. "Somehow everything triggered the doubling. Everywhere I went, my mind told me you should be there. Everything I did, Joel Dillard was supposed to be doing it with me. I can barely concentrate enough to do anything. I drive a car, and when I turn left, my mind tells me I should be turning right. I see myself turning right. I almost ran a jogger over on the way out here to see you. So I think you can see why I had to find you and talk to you. You are obviously the key to all that is happening to me. You are the one behind it somehow. I don't know how that could be, since I'd never met you before today, but it's true, it's you."
Allison took a deep breath and let out a big sigh. She looked up from her coffee cup for the first time and said,
"So, can you tell me what's going on? Can you tell me why?"
Joel considered his options. He could tell her the truth,
that he came back in time by way of a freak occurrence and changed the past, causing her mental schism. He figured that she might just believe him. But what would happen after that? She'd probably insist that he stay with her and they return to the life they were supposed to live together. And Joel was not going along with that. He went with option two instead. I'm sorry, Allison, is it? But I have no idea what is going on with you. You sound very sick. And I'd say you should seek professional help. I wish I could recommend someone to you, but I'm afraid I don't know anyone. Allison's face fell cataclysmically. She looked as if she'd just been given the news that a family member had died, or that she'd had inoperable brain cancer. Tears immediately sprang from her eyes, and she let out a sob that was very loud in the quiet restaurant. It startled Joel, and he looked around the room to see if anyone was staring at them. Several people were. Allison choked back several more sobs, loud ones, then grabbed her purse and ran from the restaurant. People's eyes bored into his back as he turned back to the table. Surely they suspected him of breaking her heart. And in a way, he supposed, he had. Her heart was set on realigning the opposing factions of her mind, which meant she had to have a relationship with Joel. It was something he couldn't do, however, so he had to leave her to fend for herself. He had to leave her brokenhearted. His Dr. Pepper arrived seconds after Allison ran out. He didn't feel like drinking it anymore, but he did anyway because he was paying for it. When his BLT came, he did the same. Then he settled the bill for himself and Allison and went out and got into his car. He sat down, went to put the key into the ignition, and something cold and metallic pressed against the back of his head. He heard a click, and his shoulders shuddered involuntarily. "Okay, Joel," Allison said from the back seat. "Drive us somewhere we can be alone." XVII. She directed him to drive to South Mountain Park, where they got out and walked a trail, Allison holding the gun on him secretly the whole way, until they were truly alone. She told him to sit down on a rock, and then squatted in front of him, gun still trained, so that they could talk eye to eye. "Okay, Joel," she said. "I'm sure you can see by now that I'm a very desperate woman. I'm completely losing touch with reality, and it's your fault." "No, Allison, I didn't..." "It's your fucking fault," she said loudly, startling Joel so much he almost slipped off his rock. The shout echoed around the mountain and eventually died away. "It's your fault," she said again, this time in a quiet whisper. "You are what's turning my head inside out, splitting my mind in two, making me fight with myself about whether you are there or not." Joel looked around. They really were completely alone. He wouldn't have thought that possible. He'd been hiking up here with Jillian several times, and it always seemed so popular and well-traveled. Allison had probably prepared for this eventuality, and been up here looking for a lonely spot to hijack him to. He wondered if maybe Allison hadn't been following him out here with Jillian sometimes. It gave him the willies and brought on a new worry for Jillian's safety. If he managed to get out of this himself, of course. "Okay," he said. "I'm sorry. What is it you want me to do about it?"
"God, I don't know, Joel," she said in a sort of panicked squeal. She brought her hands to her temples and settled back onto the ground on her behind, giving Joel his first chance to relax a little bit without that muzzle pointed at his face.
I hoped that you'd know what to do. This went a lot better when I played it out in my mind. I thought you'd say that you knew what was going on, and you'd like to make it all better."
"You don't have any ideas how?" he asked.
"No! All I know is that I'm fucking cracking up. When half of my mind says you're my husband, the rest of me has no idea even who the fuck you are, or why I would ever think that. Somehow, being with you was supposed to make it better, or clear it all up, or something.
Joel was starting to see that there might be some way to calm her down and get himself out of danger of being filled with holes.
So, I'm supposed to be your husband? He asked. This is what your mind is telling you?
Yes.
Did it tell you how we were supposed to have met? He asked.
Yes,
she said, but didn't offer more.
Well, how? How did we meet? He asked.
Supposedly, you and I met at the gym. You showed me how to get one of the machines to adjust for me, and then coached me on how to use it. Then you asked me out.
Your mind made up this whole scenario, really?
Joel knew it wasn't made up, however. That was exactly the way he and Allison had come together in his first go-around. Their relationship had been based entirely on fitness when they were young. Allison was the one who had convinced him to become a personal trainer and launched him on that career path.
Yeah, I guess, Allison said. Although, it sure didn't feel made up to me. I remember it like it really happened.
Weird, Joel thought. Is that the way Jillian remembers me breaking up with her, too? How does she reconcile it?
And you thought that just being with me would make things better? He asked.
She nodded.
How?
He asked.
I don't know, but it is. Just seeing you today has me less addled.
Joel stood up and moved towards her. She raised the gun, and Joel raised his hands to prove he meant no harm. He knelt in the soft dirt in front of her, leaned in slowly, and kissed her.
How about now? Does that make it better?
The smile that took over her face as he pulled away was different than any of the others she'd given him so far on this strange day. This one wasn't just happy. It was filled to the brim with relief. His touch, his kiss, had filled the need that she'd been so desperate to address, at least for the moment, and she seemed to be at peace. It was hard for Joel to see. Despite his fear, Joel felt an intense longing to love this young, innocent, unspoiled version of his ex-wife. He couldn't, because he was pledged to another, and he would be eaten up by guilt the next time he saw Jillian if he gave in to those cravings. With a gun to his head, though, he felt less guilty. It wasn't even that she was forcing him, because she wasn't. This was his plan, but it was his plan to get out of danger, so he didn't feel the need to worry or bother with guilt. He moved in and kissed her again, this time more passionately. Allison breathed in sharply through her nose as he did, and then moaned softly. She obviously wanted this way more than he did, and the smallest token brought her great pleasure. She wrapped her arms around him and squeezed him tightly, kissing him back hard, almost hysterically. Her hands rubbed his back frenetically, scratching and squeezing. She grabbed the bottom of his shirt and pulled it over his head in one quick motion, then did the same with her own, and then suctioned back onto his chest before he could even lower his arms. The dirt off the trail was soft from yesterday's rain, so it wasn't too uncomfortable. Having sex out in the open like they were made Joel nervous, but he swept it aside because the pistol Allison had dropped on the ground behind him made him more nervous. He hoped that this show would make her more amenable to giving up on this crazy kidnap attempt. He'd started out as the aggressor, but that didn't last. Allison went at him like a starving beast at a kill. Filled with such a frenzy, she didn't last long. She climaxed long before Joel was even in the neighborhood.
"What do you want, Joel?" she panted. "Do you want me to go down on you?"
Joel had thought there would never be a situation in his life where he'd say no to that question. But that's what he said. He wasn't really in the mood the way she had been. She might be down there all day without getting any response, and he'd not really been in this for self-gratification anyway.
"No, Allison, I'm fine," he said. "How do you feel?"
"Oh my God, so much better," she squealed.
Okay, Allison, can we go back to the car? He asked. She was still breathing heavily.
Sure. She sighed. That's fine.
They gathered up their clothes and put them back on after brushing the dirt off themselves. Joel made sure to grab the gun before Allison could and put it in his waistband. Allison saw the gun but seemed unconcerned. The glow that was emanating from her must have made the gun seem unnecessary and out of place now. Someone that happy didn't need such a thing at all. They walked back to the car, and Joel drove back to the Denny's where they had met. Allison was happy just to be dropped off at her car and let him drive away. She gave him her phone number and told him to call her soon, and then she walked dazedly to her car and got in. Joel knew it wasn't over, and that he had to start thinking about what his next move would be, but at least he'd made it out of this round alive. XVIII. Jillian came in the door noisily, keys jingling, shopping bags banging against the wall and the door. She struggled to pull her key back out of the knob and finally won the fight. Then she turned and dropped everything on the floor and sighed tiredly.
Hey, baby, did you have a good day off? She asked. I wish I'd been here to enjoy it with you.
Joel appeared from the back room. He was nervous, and Jillian recognized it in his face immediately.
What? She said. What's going on?
You're okay? Nobody messed with you coming in or anything? He asked.
What? No. Nobody. What's going on, Joel?
Okay, so while you were out, this crazy woman came to the door. Joel had gone over just how much he would tell her. He had to leave a lot out. Obviously, he wasn't going to tell her he'd had intercourse in the dirt by a trail at South Mountain Park with the crazy woman. And even more obviously, he wasn't going to talk about the time travel elements inherent in the whole situation. But what, beyond all that, was safe to tell her? She seemed really messed up. She told me that I was supposed to be her husband.
What? Jillian said.
Yeah, I have no idea who she was, and she said that she didn't know me either, but that I was supposed to be her husband. I think the voices in her head told her that or something.
Really? That's weird. So this woman was crazy? Schizophrenic or something? She asked.
I guess. I don't really know. I told her that I wasn't her husband and that I couldn't be because I was already married. But I think that made her mad. Then I told her to get out of here or I'd call the police.
What did she say? Jillian asked.
Well, she screamed at me, but then she left. I was worried that she might attack you or something. I think she might have a gun, too, because when she left, there was a kind of weird-looking lump in the waistband of her pants.
Holy shit, Joel! You didn't call the cops, then?
No, Joel said. Because she left. But now I wonder if that was a good idea. She might come back. And who knows what she might do.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Jillian went to the fridge, pulled a bottle of water out, opened it, and drank deeply. When she finished, she said,
She said you were supposed to be her husband?
Yeah, it was really weird. She said that her brain was split in two, and that on one side I was her husband, but on the other side I wasn't, Joel said.
Wait, what? She said that her brain was... Joel, that sounds like my problem.
What are you talking about, Jilly? You're not schizo or whatever, Joel said, but inside he realized that he'd probably said too much. Jillian and Allison were suffering from the same issue, and he'd used a few too many of Allison's actual words in that last statement.
No, I know, but remember back when I thought you were breaking up with me, when you were actually asking me to marry you?
Allison asked, becoming animated. Yeah?
Well, that's what it was like for me. It felt like my brain was split in two or something. And one side of me was trying to tell me that we were over. The other side was trying to argue. It was really hard to deal with. the same thing kept happening. Like when I called you lazy bones, and when I forgot to pick you up from the beach that one time. I'd forgotten you were there. Or, more like half of my mind was insisting that I didn't know you anymore, and it was winning out.
Weird, Joel said. So you think this woman has something like what you had?
Not had, Joel. Have. I still deal with it all the time. It's not as bad here in Phoenix, because I think the unfamiliar place doesn't trigger the wrong memories as much. But I still deal with it all the time.
I didn't realize. I'm sorry, Jilly. Is there something I can do?
I don't know, Joel. I think I'm doing okay. But if it gets worse, I may have to go to the doctor or something.
Wow. Oh, man. Joel stepped up to her and gave her a hug. He had no idea it was such a problem for her still. He'd been watching for any signs since they'd moved to town, and as far as he could tell, there were none. Now he knew that she had problems still, but he still didn't know how to make it better. For Allison, a little time with a guy who the memories insisted she should be with had made her feel better. Maybe he needed to drive back to L.A. and bring Lazy Bones home with him. He could give her a nice dime bag, and she could get back to what she'd been up to in the original timeline. Damn it, he seethed inwardly. Why isn't there anything I can do? There are no options other than bad ones. Jillian looked up at him.
So what are we going to do about this crazy woman? Do you think she'll come back?
He was certain she'd come back. As soon as the afterglow from that last orgasm wore off, she'd be back demanding that he become her husband and put her split-brain demons to rest for good. He didn't know how this would play out, but he could see no positive path through for them all. He had a bad feeling about how this was going to go. I'm afraid that she will, he said. I think we're going to have to be careful for a while. I think I'll walk you out to your car every time you go anywhere to make sure she doesn't get you alone. I don't know what she'll do, but I don't want to risk it.
Okay. Do you think we need to call the police?
Jillian asked. I don't know. Maybe we'll call them if she comes around again.
Okay. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm beat. I'm going to hit the sack,
she said. She poked him in the stomach, causing him to grunt and double over involuntarily. She laughed that melodious, deep chuckle of hers, turned and walked toward the bedroom. He went to the front door, locked the knob, shot the bolt, and added the chain for good measure. Then he followed Jillian. In bed, she snuggled close to his body, spooning tightly together. He looked down at her face, and then, feeling incredibly guilty, had to look away. I didn't want to do it, he argued with himself. I had to. It saved my life. Thinking of lives saved, he looked back down at Jillian. Whatever the hell he had to do, it was all worth it for her. For her, it was worth it. It took a lot longer for Allison to come back than Joel expected. For 2 full weeks, he walked Jillian out to her car whenever she went anywhere, went along with her whenever possible, checked to make sure he'd locked the door about once every half hour, and watched out the window for people slinking in the shadows. After a while, his guard began to let down. He started to wonder if it was over already. Maybe boinking in the dirt that one time was all Allison needed to put her mind to rights. Could it possibly be that easy? And if so, did he need to take Jillian to see Lazy Bones so she could be cured too? He'd lived with a woman that he'd known had cheated on him for years. It hadn't been all that bad. Surely he could handle it again. Especially if she only cheated to get cured of her mental illness. Hell, he was a cheater now, so how could he begrudge it to Jillian? It was a silly speculation, he knew. Allison wasn't cured. She'd be back. He expected that their outdoor tryst was nothing more than a couple of Tylenol to ward off a headache. If it was a bad headache, then it always returned. And if what he'd seen with Jillian was any example, it was a really bad headache. He was in the kitchen getting a drink of water when the knock at the door came. Jillian answered it, and before Joel could even get to the door, the scuffle had begun.
You! He heard Allison shouting. You're the bitch that's keeping him from me!
By the time Joel made it to the doorway, he saw that Allison had pushed her way in, tackled Jillian to the ground, and was yanking viciously on her hair. He didn't hesitate. He stepped in and kicked Allison in the ribs. She screamed and fell away from Jillian. Joel stepped in and grabbed her around the midsection and hauled her off the ground. He dragged her out the door and tossed her out on the ground. She looked up at him, betrayal on her face.
She's poisoned you against me, Joel? Allison said in disbelief.
What the hell are you talking about? She's my wife. You are not. Now get out of here and don't come back. We're calling the police right now, understand? He went back to the door and slammed it shut. He locked it, then watched Allison out the window to make sure she left. Jillian was on the phone dialing 911. Outside, Allison stood before the home, breathing heavily and glowering. She bent and grabbed a pretty large rock. No, Joel mumbled and moved involuntarily away from the window. Just in time, too, Allison's rock blew through the window like it had been shot from a cannon. Glass flew everywhere, and it was all he could do to shield his face and avoid the worst of the possible injuries. Jillian screamed, but she was at least far enough away to evade all the flying glass. Joel shook the glass from his clothes and looked out the window. Allison was running as fast as she could for her car. She jumped inside and tore away with a squeal of tires and a roar of the engine.
Oh my God,
Jillian whispered and started to sob. Alright, everybody, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed this portion of the story. We're still not there, but we're almost there. There's only one more episode after this, and you get to find out just how this turns out. Spoiler alert, I wrote it. Okay, so Rich Outfield, how did you enjoy this portion of the story? You still don't know how it turns out either, because I've only been meeting you out little portions, little bits. You only get to know what everybody else listening to the story knows.
That's right. But you wrote it, so I have a pretty good idea. So the moving to Arizona helped Jillian for the most part. She still occasionally has two pairs of memories. Like how, between this episode and the last episode, how many years have passed?
You're asking for too much specifics for a story that I wrote almost 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
But from what I can remember, having read it and performed it again, I'm pretty sure it's been probably 6 months since they got married that they're there. So, you know, like he's been probably in the past maybe a year or two, something like that. It's not a lot. It's only been a little bit of time. But it is more than just a week or something like that. You know, they've been there, they've settled in and all of that. And they're starting to have friends. And then, oh my gosh, somebody knocked on the door. And it wasn't Lazy Bones. Sorry, everybody, about that. Yeah, I put the songs that come from the era. Or if they're actually specifically referenced in the episode, then I'll put that on. And there were two songs specifically referenced in last week's episode. And so I put them on in order that they were referenced. And then afterwards, I thought, oh, geez. Putting that Lazy Bones song right after saying there was a knock at the door probably made people think that Lazy Bones was the guy on the other side of the door and he was there looking for Jillian. That was not the case, as you now know. It was Allison, who is having similar bad times to that of Jillian with her mind fracturing and splitting and trying to remember both the past and the future. No. The past and the present? I don't know what you'd call it. The alternate past and the new present. Something like that.
But when she was in L.A. and kept thinking that she would see Joel. Like, she would talk to Joel, she would wake up, and Joel should be there, but he's not there. Was Joel already living in Arizona at that point? Or was he there in L.A. too? Could they have accidentally crossed paths?
When she was having her troubles, you know, it would be... She's remembering when they got together. They got together in L.A. and then moved to Arizona together as a couple later.
Right, but she moved to Arizona. It sounds like she moved to Arizona so that she could start cheating on Joel with this ex-boyfriend of hers.
Right. Yeah, she was a piece of work, and so that's what she was after. But yeah, you know, they still lived together. They still were. She would still remember him being the guy that was there that she would talk to and that kind of stuff. The fact that it wasn't that way messing her up.
Well, that's interesting to me is because you've painted her in a really unsympathetic light up to this point. But I couldn't help but feel sorry for her because...
Mm-hmm.
Especially that scene in Danny's where she's expecting it's all going to be made okay now. And he says, you know, I've never seen you before. I don't know what's wrong with you. I felt bad for her. Then, of course, you know, she kidnaps him and I felt less bad. And she assaults Jillian and I felt less bad. But at the same time, it's not fair what is happening to her. And...
Right.
Jillian's been having these problems too, but of course we like Jillian. But my worry is, in the alternate timeline, Jillian died of an overdose. What happens when we reach that point in time when she's supposed to be dead?
Well, I don't want to spoil anything for you. So... I won't say anything. I won't answer your question, sir. That you have to wait until next week to find out. But you will find out.
But what a terrible idea, though. I mean, she keeps having these ideas, these thoughts, that she's with the other guy, the Lazy Bones guy, or that, you know, Joel has broken up with her rather than married her, because that's what... where she was on that date the first time around. And so when we get to this day, whenever it is, when she originally died, what is her reaction going to be? What would that do to your mind? Will she start to think, I'm supposed to be in a coffin right now? Why? That's the cemetery. That's where I'm supposed to be. Am I warm at all on where the story is going?
I'm just going to have to plead the fifth on that one, Rich Outfield. Again, I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm not answering your question.
Okay, well, answer this. What are we supposed to feel about Allison? Am I right?
Yeah, Allison is sort of tragic, as well as, you know, I mean, we already have bad feelings for her because of the way the story started, because of what things, you know, how things have gone and so forth. But I think hopefully you feel that way about everybody who's involved in this. You know, it's a really bad situation and there's nothing that they can do about it. They're just coming apart at the seams just because they were trying to make things better, trying to make things happier for all involved this time around. Just one of those kind of things. Life isn't fair. Anyone who says differently is selling something. That's, I guess, what this story is hammering home. And you just got to deal with it. I guess, you know, God smashes you down and you just got to get back up and keep on trying or whatever. I don't know. I like this story, but it is a really hard to deal with story. But I do think it has a lot of good elements in it that are interesting and thought-provoking, I guess.
So I've got two questions. Is Joel still doing his version of CrossFit? And is it successful enough that he owns his own home?
He is doing his own version of CrossFit, but he's working for someone else. At this point, he's not successful enough to own his own home. He just lives in an apartment.
All right. And then the other question is, the pistol, the gun that Allison pulled on him, did he give that back to her or does he still have it? He tells Jillian that he thought he saw like a bulge in her, you know, in her pants or so. Well, that sounds strange. he thought he saw that she had a gun, but we don't know if he's just saying that. And he had earlier confiscated the gun, but does he still have it?
That gun that she had for the hostage situation, Joel holds on to. He doesn't give it back to her. He's smart enough, at least, to hold on to that. Does that mean that she can't get her hands on another one? No. I mean, she's not a felon or anything like that. And she hasn't been arrested. They didn't catch her throwing the rock through the window. So we shall see. But I don't know. I might need to cut you off. You're asking too many spoilery questions for the big finale. I don't want to give away too much stuff.
Okay, well, shoot. Maybe we should just end then so that you can get that last episode out faster.
Yeah, we can do that. We can bring it to a close. One thing I did want to ask you, just what your thoughts were. You weren't around for episode 2 of this story. I did that one by myself, and I just talked about AI and motivation. What do you think about AI and writing AI? You know, I talked about the Writers Guild being on strike, and one of their things that they're striking about is they want to make sure the AI can't take their jobs. I've heard a lot of people using AI to write things like advertising copy and that kind of stuff, which is the job of somebody usually to write advertising copy. So I was just wondering how worth it is it for me to keep struggling on writing when it could come to the point where AI can just do it for me faster and better. I don't think we're at that point now. I suspect, I don't know though, I haven't really messed around with AI enough to know what kind of things it can actually achieve. But what kind of feelings do you have towards that? Does it worry you, the AI thing?
I did listen to that episode where you talked about it, and I felt bad for you because it sounds like this is really on your mind and keeping you up at night. But I screenwriting is so hard, even if you go to school for it or whatever, and you're a human being that feels. And if you recall, we had our buddy Ian in our circle of friends, and Ian was an expert at pointing out what was wrong with somebody's screenplay or with a movie or with a short film. I'm not saying that he wasn't a creative person, but he was much more of a critical eye on other people's creativity than he was a creative person. And that used to frustrate me because it was just like, whoa, 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 whoa. I gave up my weekend writing that. And in 3 sentences, you basically say I wasted my time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I felt like I was a pretty good screenwriter. But then you sit down with somebody like Ian, or the time that I went in and did a pitch, and you know all the months that it had taken me to write my screenplay, they just dismissed by saying, obviously you've watched a lot of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Keep on writing. Good night. And it's just like, well, holy shit, dude. It took us longer to park than to do this pitch. Anyhow, that's a roundabout way of saying you can teach a computer like the rules, and you can teach them what the format of writing a story or a script is like.
Mm-hmm.
But all it can do as far as creativity goes is regurgitate what someone has put into it or what it has observed. It could write an episode of The Simpsons, but it wouldn't have anything unique about it, and it wouldn't have any heart. And you would watch that episode and think, is this one I've seen before? The AI, it's not creative. It doesn't have intuition. It doesn't have a spark. It doesn't have memories and emotions to look back on and say, gosh, I remember how I felt when this happened. I'm going to use that. It can only regurgitate. It can only repeat what it has already seen. And so I think that it would be interesting to see what kind of art AI could make. Not, you know, visual art, because we've seen that. We've seen AI-generated posters and
right.
porn and comics and, you know, all the things. And sometimes it's cool, and sometimes it's that uncanny valley. Sometimes it's like, wait, oh, there's something not right about that.
Right.
You know, your hind brain tells you, dude, there's something that was not made by a person. But as far as, like, you know, high art, getting an AI to write a song, getting AI to write a movie, that I think it's always going to be outside of its abilities. There was a movie a couple of years ago. It was right around the pandemic, called Brightburn. It was the Superman origin, if Superman were evil. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the Kents adopt this alien child, but he's evil. And they just announced this week, the week that you and I are recording this episode, a sequel to Brightburn. And they said, we're going to have AI write the script. And immediately people were up in arms and saying, boycott, we don't want to F these guys. But I was just like, no, I want to see how that could work. I want to see how they come up with something. I want it to fail, because sometimes failure is interesting. And I know I told you 6 months or a year ago, there was an episode of South Park where all the kids started using ChatGPT to write their essays and do their homework. And then at the end of the episode, Trey Parker asked ChatGPT, write me an episode of South Park. And they just show what ChatGPT told them to do. They animated the script. And it's just, you know, then Mr. Garrison comes in and says this line that he always says, you know, and then Cartman's mom comes in here and says the thing that she always says. And it's just, it was alien. It was without any humanity or depth or creativity or spark or any reason you would watch it. And so I'm not afraid of AI taking over yet. Now, obviously, you had mentioned the conversation that we had had, that a lot of the writers in Hollywood are afraid that studios are going to have ChatGPT write them a script, and it's going to suck, and then they'll bring in a real writer, a flesh and blood writer, to do a rewrite. But it's not an original script, it's a rewrite, so they can pay them way, way less. And that's something that the WGA is really afraid of. And you wouldn't put it past any studio to do that. That sounds like something they would have done for years if they could.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, one of the things that they are striking about is we don't want that to happen. We don't want you guys to be able to pay a machine to do something so that you don't have to pay us or so that you can pay us less. Anyhow, I'm also an audiobook narrator. And there are a lot of people that are afraid that AI will take that job, too. That you'll be able to take Stephen Fry's voice, digitize it, and then have Stephen Fry narrate your audiobook long after he's dead. But every single time I have ever clicked on an article on the internet, and there's a button that said, listen to this article instead of read it, and I've clicked on it, I've regretted it. Because it sounds like what it is. It sounds like a machine that doesn't know how human cadence works.
Right.
Emphasis, pauses, and all of that stuff. Yeah, it will get better. But it's never going to be as good as what I do. Or as what Frank Muller used to do. Or, you know, whoever is a great audio... Veronica Guigert, if I'm saying her name right. AI is never going to be able to do that because it has taken years for us and the late Frank Muller to get to that level of performance.
Yeah, I guess I can understand that. And it's definitely, you know, the stuff that you talk about the Writers Guild being worried about is not anything that I have to worry about as someone who's just writing novels. I think it will be interesting to see what lies ahead in that whole field. But yeah, I've kind of come to the realization that it's probably worth it no matter what. If nothing else, just because getting the ideas out of my head and onto the paper is neat. It's fun. And being able to look at a story and you know, like this story here, I haven't seen it in a long time. Like I was saying, I wrote it not 10 years ago, but something close to that. It's been a long time, and I don't really remember it that well. And as I have been narrating it again and rereading it, I enjoy it. I really enjoy this story. It's always been one I remembered really fondly, but now rereading it again, I'm like, oh man, yeah, this I like this story. This is a good one. And there's something about that that's just really great. Something about that that's really fun. And I really like about writing. And so it's something that I need to just get over my laziness and get back to it and stop coming up with excuses. Because I think it is worth my while. Will it ever amount to what I want it to amount to? Will it ever be a day where I can make the same amount of money as a writer that I do as a video editor for the news? Well, that day may come when the news just goes away and I get fired and then I'm making $0 at both of those things, but it may never go the other direction. But you did tell me, I guess you were talking with Abby on the phone and she told you to tell me that it's worth it. And at the time, you hadn't even listened to the episode, so you had no idea what she was talking about. But I think I agree with her. I think it is worth it, and I think I'm going to keep after it for sure. I guess that's it for our episode today, then. I'm going to go ahead and let it go, and we'll head on out. So thanks, everybody, for showing up, for listening to episode 4 of Do Over, and we'll be back next time with the final episode, the concluding chapter of Do Over. I have been Big Anklevich.
And I have been the AI formerly known as Rish Outfield.
And I am Announcer Man.
He's just a recorded guy. Don't bother with him.
He is an actual AI. Good night.